right, Debbie. It's nice to meet you.
Well, it's nice to meet you, Eric. I love this film.
Oh, Debbie, that means the world to me. I put my heart and soul into this thing, and as did our entire cast and crew, and it's so nice to hear people responding to it.
Got this haunting, ethereal quality. You know, at times it feels like a fairy tale. It addresses grief. You've got Hitchcockian suspense. Very much has that Daphne du Maurier, Rebecca twist to it. But then you throw in Peter Simonite's beautiful cinematography and all of the exacting and meticulous framing that the two of you did. A stunner, an absolute stunner. I love this film.
Oh, I'm so excited. Thank you. I love it too. I'm so excited to be finally sharing it. It's been such a long road, a long journey. You know, this is a movie that the system didn't necessarily want to make. This is a movie that I don't think the system really wanted to make. Because it doesn't just sit firmly in a specific modern-day genre, right? I mean, mm-hmm. You know, this is, film marketers do what they do, and they're great at what they do, but doing something a little bit off the straight mark is not always in their interest, and this is such a passion project for everyone involved. It's just thrilling to get it to this point.
How did this story even come to you? I know it's based on Silvio Raffo's novel, but this is, it's out of the way. It's not a book that somebody would pick up and say, oh, what's this? I think I'm going to turn it into a screenplay.
Yeah, that's a great story. Well, my producer, Dean Zanuck, who's a wonderful guy, and Stefano Gallini Durante are partners. And Stefano's family is in the publishing business in Italy. Stefano read this book, brought it to Dean. Dean loved it. And they said, we want to make a film. And they started looking for, they got the screenplay developed, but it kept going down the road of straight genre film. And they brought me to the table. I met them through my manager. And we just hit it off. And I pitched them a love story. I pitched them a story about loss and grief and fear and confusion and madness and the desire for connection. And they loved it. And we just said, that's the movie we want to make. It's maybe a longer road, but it's the movie that this deserves to be. And it just evolved into that.
I'm glad you mentioned it. It doesn't fit into any one genre. You have so many elements here, emotional elements, that can toss it into a number. You can go in a number of different directions with the interpretation, and even with the visuals that you've captured, we don't have definitive, so many are open-ended that leaves to the moviegoer's imagination. And I love that. Yeah. I love that.
You know, Debbie, that's such a fine line, because you have to tell a complete story, yet leave enough to keep them thinking about it. And mm-hmm. And some people aren't comfortable with that, but that's the kind of movie that we wanted to make, and a movie that didn't confuse you, but left you wanting to answer questions, and left you wanting to ask questions, and left you wanting to maybe watch it again.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I definitely want to see it again. There is no question about it, and as soon as it's available on DVD and Blu-ray, I'm going to buy it and own it.
Yay, I'm so happy to hear that.
You know, I'm curious, because the visuals are so key and so important in the storytelling here, this is not just something that performance and story, but your visuals tell a story, as does your sonic, your soundscape, the oral aspect of it also is another layer of storytelling here. But I want to start with what you and Peter came up with the cinematography. You shot anamorphically, it looks like, so I'm guessing you did.
Absolutely.
And then you make use of color, lighting, your light and shadows, imagery with water, you know, just those little drips coming off the statue's face like crying tears at night, the heavy mist and fog. These lovely nuances. What were the considerations for the two of you when you developed this visual palette?
Boy, that's a big question. It starts with finding somebody who's sort of obviously obviously aesthetically on the same page, and Peter just did a great job of sort of understanding what this movie wanted to be. And we knew that we were making a period film. We were very concerned about the lenses, first of all, to make sure that we had lenses that created a painterly quality, that treated light in a way that felt like it did in 1950. You know, we used lenses that were old. I don't know the specific year of the lenses, but you're exactly right. The anamorphic lenses we used were very primary in the aesthetic choice. We knew that we're shooting in castles, and neither one of these locations had ever been filmed in. We shot our exteriors and interiors in two separate locations because of the size of the castle we needed to keep in mind. You can't, some of these small castles, you can't put a camera in.
Sure.
Because they're just too small on an anamorphic lens. But, for example, if you look at the interiors, the walls in the castle are white, but they're not a true white. They've, in fact, archaeologists come to study how these walls have been painted. And that's very rare. I mean, Peter was initially a little concerned that we're making a ghost story in a castle that's got white walls. But the walls came alive because of the way they had been painted. It's a very special place in the way it handled light. And it allowed us to have just, you know, as I say, these castles are laid out for light. It allowed us to just sort of follow the sun and follow the light. And when we color corrected it, you know, there were no true blacks. You know, my grandmother taught me very early in life that, as she was a painter, that in the shadows there is no black.
Right.
It's the combination of colors. And we really tried to stay true to that in our color correction process.
And you can, I can see that, especially in Klaus's studio. You know,
right.
There's so many shadows.
It makes you want to look in there. It makes you want to look into the shadows, doesn't it?
Yeah, it creates this great, almost a negative space that really it adds a textural depth to the image. Because you look at these images, and any one of them, you could just pull out and turn it into a painting hanging on a wall. Each one is that beautiful. Just amazed me. And I love what you said about the walls, because so often with castles, you think of either over the years they've been peachified in the Tuscan kind of color palette, or you've got medieval castles that are just, they are dank and dark and disgusting. But here, especially you look in Malvina's room with the way the window is positioned and the light coming in and how open and airy, and even the piano room, floor-to-ceiling windows, open, airy, and that lightness on the wall. You never feel claustrophobic, and everything feels wide open, its own world. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful result, Eric.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, when you work with a crew, an all-Italian crew, and a guy like Peter and my composer, I say my, because I take ownership on him.
Michael
Wanwalker, yeah. He's a dear, I was the best man in his wedding, so I can say my. It's all of those elements, right? I mean, our costume designer, much of our production design happened through costume design and set dressing. And when you're working with Italians, they breathe art.
Mm-hmm.
They breathe culture. They, you know, you sit in a restaurant with them and have lunch, and they'll tell you how the stone in this restaurant is the same stone that Giovanni Bernini used when he created The Rape of Persephone. You know, I mean, you're surrounded by people who are meticulous with every little detail. And I think that really shows in the film on every level.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm glad you brought up your production design and costumes. I mean, Anna Lombardi, the costumes that she designed for, especially the ones for Amelia, are just, I mean, it's right out of Vogue 1950s. Absolutely gorgeous, flawless.
Am I crazy? I feel like she deserves every award in the world. And it's such a small film, you know, it's hard to get noticed. But my gosh, she did such a beautiful job.
You know, what she did with costumes here equates to what Sandy Powell did in Carol for Cate Blanchett.
Did you know that Anna was Sandra Powell's protege for like 15 years?
I did not know that.
Funny, she did like 6 or 7 movies with her. I got a letter from Sandra Powell telling, wow, your eye is impeccable, because I got a letter from Sandra Powell telling me I must use Anna Lombardi on this film, that she's perfect for it. She read the script and loved it and said, Anna is who you need to use. And when you get a letter from Sandra Powell, you just kind of go yes to anything she says.
Oh, I had no idea that Anna had worked with Sandy.
She's amazing. You should do an interview with Anna. She's amazing. She's in London right now. She's phenomenal.
But, I mean, the costuming, and even down to what you've got Edward clothed in as Jacob. Very period perfect, very regionally specific, beautifully done. But it does go hand in hand with what David DiStefano did with the production design and your set decoration.
Yeah.
I look at the night table in the room and the vintage hairbrushes and the picture frames. Every little detail is so meticulous, Eric. And as a first-time feature director, you blow my mind with all the attention that is paid here.
Well, I'm so grateful that you noticed those details. And that's, you know, David DiStefano and our set dresser, our set designer, Cynthia Slider, who's worked with every great Italian director out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's so interesting because they bring these details to you, and then it's about what you take away, and it's about what you don't do, right? So much of what this production design is about, don't allow it to become noticed. And you keep pulling things away until, okay, I don't notice it anymore, but it feels right. And it's such it's much like making a sculpture. You're working from a reduction point of view and pulling things out.
And it also goes very much with the story itself. Are people hearing voices? Was there really a hairbrush there? It makes your mind subconsciously, it affects your mind because it's so real. You believe that something should have been laying there or was laying there, and all of a sudden it's gone. Or, yes, that curtain was fluttering or it wasn't fluttering. It melds
right
so beautifully into the entire emotional ambient experience that...
Debbie, I've got to ask you a question.
Sure.
I've got to ask you a question. Did you notice in the sex scene, in the love scene, did you notice there's an extra hand, a woman's hand? Nobody immediately says it, and I can't tell if anyone's getting it or not.
Well,
I
thought, it's like, okay, I need to rewatch it just to catch that. But then it kind of solidified for me in the climactic ending within the crypt. And we've got Malvina and Verena in there. And then her hand is coming. You know, granted, we see her face,
right,
but the hand is just gently caressing and going over the body, just lingering above it like a specter.
Right, exactly. And what's so fun about that is that while it's frightening, is the return of love, and
yeah,
this is why I wanted to make the movie. I wanted to make it about the indelible nature of love, and that's scary, right?
Very
and
much so.
Fear in it, laced into it, and that's what I was hoping, or I'm hoping that people can see that it's about feeling love and also feeling fear, and that those two emotions often play hand in hand.
Well, they really do. And, you know, very much what I thought spoke very loudly about the concept of love is the mausoleum, the lighting with the candles and the golden umbers and warmth. Because typically you would think a mausoleum and the catacombs are dark and dank. And yes, we see that beautiful damp gloss on the cobblestone floors and walls. But with the candle, with the flame, the way it is, the lighting coming from the side, almost like the sun peeking around the corner, you feel a warmth in there at that mausoleum, which I found very striking.
Exactly.
And surprising.
No, that's true. It's so true. David DiStefano and Peter Simonite really, really nailed that. They really did a great job. And what the creepy story about that for me personally is, you know, I've been working on this for 2.5 years, 3 years before we were able to shoot, and the production team is in there building it, and there's the Malvina grave, and we've taken, you know, the two women facing each other on the headstone, and taken all this time to pick everything just right, and I look above it, and Malvina's last name is Reeve, which is my maternal Italian family. Yeah, I put that in there. Well, I wrote that part in, but what I didn't write in was just above Malvina's grave is Pietro Reeve, who's my great-grandfather. They put that in. They didn't know. He just picked a name, right? So here's my Italian heritage coming to haunt me in the middle of production. And that was day one of production. We shot, because of rain, we shot actually the scene where Amelia is kind of in the clasp of madness when she's telling Jacob she knows what he must do and he must speak. That's sort of the height of her madness, and it actually became a blessing, because what it did was, from a performance perspective, it was like, Amelia, this is as mad as you're going to be, right? You're taking a kid to a grave and saying, talk to your dead mother.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get crazier than this. And that became our reference point. And it was a wonderful piece of serendipity that happened for our scheduling point of view.
You know, I would be remiss not to ask you about sitting in the editing bay with Clayton and coming up with your pacing, because the pacing is so key to building the suspense and the tension here. How challenging was the editing process for Voice from the Stone?
Much more than I ever realized it would be. And it was never an issue. You are a true cinema person, because you really understand how it wasn't that we didn't have material. We had copious amounts of material. We had everything we needed. But trying to figure out not only the pacing, but how much we needed to give. I mean, if you look at what, you know, I don't want to give spoilers to your audience, but, you know, this is a movie where the midpoint, turning point, is a woman putting on a dress,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, that's a pivotal turning point for a movie.
Yeah, that 49-minute mark is a killer.
Right, and that takes a really delicate, if you go too slow, you bore them. If you go too fast, you lose any sense of anticipation. And so it was, I won't lie, it was excruciating. That was probably the most difficult part of the process. Clayton was brilliant and is brilliant. It took a lot of labor, and I had a lot of input from Dean Zanuck and Stefano, and we went back and forth, and we tried a lot of things, and knowing how much to give away about you know, who's a ghost and who isn't, or don't give that away, please. Even how much to say in the end. Is Malvina back, or is it Verena? And all of that happens in the edit, and it was, quite frankly, the most laborious part of this process, because there were so many subtleties that you don't know if you're going one step too far or being too reductive.
What was this learning curve like for you? Your first feature, you come out of a stunt background, stunt coordination, second unit stuff. So what was this learning curve like for you to, you know, jump into the director's chair?
You know, for me as a stunt coordinator and a stuntman, this might sound a little esoteric, but as a stunt coordinator, your job is to create safe spaces for actors to perform.
Mm-hmm.
As a director, your job is to create safe spaces for actors to perform. And it's a different kind of safety, and it's a different kind of understanding of vulnerability. And for me, it was not only about the way I had to reach that vulnerability with both my actors and my crew was to allow myself to be vulnerable and allow myself to let them support and rise up and do what they do. And so this was a real lesson in giving leadership through vulnerability and allowing people to do what they're wonderful at. And the more I supported them in their efforts, the more they made the movie shine and therefore made me shine.